Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, an Armenian church leader winds up his visit to the Vatican with an urgent appeal for unity amongst all the divided Christian churches. The Holy See helps cut carbon emissions by installing new solar panels on the roof of the audience hall. And the World Catholic Association for Communications marks its 80th birthday. Stay tuned. Dialogue and the search for unity amongst the divided Christian churches is more urgent today than ever before. That's the sense of the ecumenical movement today, and it was expressed clearly at a press conference on Wednesday by the Armenian Catholicos of Cilicia, Aram I, at the end of his five-day visit to the Vatican.
This is my second official visit to the Holy See. I come from Lebanon. I am the Catholicos, Armenian Catholicos of Cilicia. I have been here as Catholicos 11 years ago. I believe that these kinds of visits are very important to enhance our further understanding, to foster our ecumenical relations on the way towards manifesting the full communion and the visible unity of the church. We are living in a world where the churches cannot remain indifferent or silent vis-a-vis the problems, the concerns, the crises that humanity is facing. We must act, and we must act together. Togetherness is the source of strength. Even if we may disagree as churches on different doctrinal, theological matters, but the basis and the raison d'etre of the churches are the same.
A former moderator of the Central Committee of the World Council of Churches and a well-respected figure on the Middle East Council of Churches, Aram I has been promoting several initiatives to show a more united Christian witness in today's world, including efforts to persuade the Eastern and Western churches to celebrate Easter on the same day.
As a matter of fact, it's not a new idea on our ecumenical agenda. In the last three decades, from time to time, this question was raised and, in fact, thoroughly discussed. In different times, in different contexts, there is a process of maturation in that respect. You see, in my view, I think this is very important because I don't see any doctrinal, theological, or ecclesiological problem there. The only problem, if it's a problem, it's not a problem in my view, it's a question of calendars. So celebrating Easter together gives a tangible, visible manifestation of our unity. Can you imagine for the churches as minorities in a Muslim world celebrating the Holy Easter, you see, on different Sundays? What the people will say about this picture of division? Let's celebrate together. If there are certain issues related to calendar, we need to overcome these difficulties for the sake of manifesting our togetherness.
The Armenian Catholicos of Cilicia, Aram I, at the conclusion of his five-day visit to the Vatican. Argue it was Francis of Assisi, patron saint of the environment, with his canticle to Brother Sun, who first showed the way towards a greener church. More recently, Pope John Paul II was well known for his ecological concerns, dedicating the World Peace Day message back in 1990 to the theme "Peace with God the Creator, Peace with all of creation." In that document, he explores not only the theological questions of man's stewardship of creation, but also raises the very real fears of increased conflict, poverty, and insecurity provoked by a reckless exploitation of the Earth's energy and other natural resources. And Pope Benedict, too, has repeatedly spoken of the problem of costly and increasingly scarce energy supplies, calling for more responsible behaviour to redress the balance of man's destruction of the environment. Well, now the Vatican has gone one step further still, practicing what it preaches by installing solar panels on the roof of the modern Paul VI Audience Hall, thus generating 300 megawatts of clean energy to heat and light the huge building. Designed by Italian architect Pierluigi Nervi and inaugurated by Pope Paul VI in 1971, the hall already had raised concrete tiles on its gently sloping roof to keep the building cool during the long hot summer. Since that original roof was in need of restoration, the Vatican's technical team decided it was the perfect moment to install the new solar panels, paid for by a German alternative energy company called Solar World.
Yes, the idea comes from the words of the Pope, the Holy Father, about the environmental topics, and of course from the good matching between this kind of installation and the configuration, the shape of the building of the audience hall.
Mauro Villarini is the engineer in charge of alternative energy projects within Vatican City. He told me why those responsible for running the smallest state in the world are placing an increasingly high priority on such environmental concerns.
Because we think that it's important to give a signal to the world about the duty that every state has to work on about environment, the care on environment and the duty on developing renewable energies.
Can you tell us about any other kind of projects, any other kind of work that is already underway or that you're planning to make the Vatican a greener state?
We can't reveal everything, but yes, we want to develop other projects, important projects. One here in the state about solar cooling production, and other projects outside in the extra areas of Vatican City State where we can use biggest surfaces and so we can reach biggest powers.
What about even smaller details, like, for example, recycling?
Yes, we have also a plan about energy saving, and so the rescue of energy, the same project of the Vatican Canteen is an example of energy rescue. In that project we use an absorber, chiller, which is able to rescue the energy that you would not use. So you can rescue this energy and produce, for example, cold for the canteen where the employees of Vatican go every day. And so you have in the summer with the energy which would not be used otherwise, a nice, pleasant environment inside.
I think it's important that this kind of science arrive also from people which are not technically obliged to. They don't see the thing as a mission, but they realize the general importance of the system.
Italian scientist Carlo Rubbia is a member of the Pontifical Academy of Sciences and won the Nobel Prize for Physics in 1984. He now focuses his research on new technologies for renewable energy sources and was present here in the Vatican for the inauguration of the new solar panels on November 26, 2008.
There are two questions coming here. One question has to do with the fact that that the resources coming from fossils are relatively limited in time. You know, in a sufficiently long period of time, one has to find other forms of energy. The fossils are not forever. So there is one question. Fossils may be prematurely required to reach a limit if, as we believe, there are very substantial phenomena coming from global warming, which in fact will limit the amount of producing of fossils far earlier than it would be possible by just burning anything which is there to be burnt. And this is in fact our major concern, that which you see some signs of that, which are universal. If you say, even the Nobel Committee has recognized the importance of these things last year, that many countries have discussed, there are lots of arguments worldwide, that one should curb the emission of fossils in a gradual way. And the real question is, what else can we do? Because energy is necessary. Without energy, there will be no happy mankind. There will be no solution to the world. It's one of the basic things which make our existence possible and acceptable. And surely no energy means also lots of unrest, a lot of competition, a lot of fightings, as the whole human race will have serious problems if the energy will become cheap and abundant energy will be missing. So we have to find new sources. And the sun is definitely one of the sources which is worth considering. In my view, it's a superb source of energy, which all the elements would permit a progressive diffusion of this. Obviously, the example today is a symbol in the sense that it takes much more that energy than that to make a twist, a change into the situation of energy production. But examples have a significance in the sense that they can prove the possibility of doing that something, and they also convince people of the importance of doing something. And therefore, although the present object is a modest thing, it has the seeds for a much bigger development and an improvement, which, of course, science and technology are now getting prepared to do, and is a step in the right direction. So I think that today's celebration is something which I think is important, and I'm happy to be here.
We're shortly to see a change of leadership also in the United States. Are you hopeful that there may be some significant changes in the energy policies coming out of there soon too?
Well, let me say, I believe that today in renewable energies, Europe is definitely the number one. For 8 years, 10 years, we had a rather conservative approach. And many of the natural resources, which are also possible in Europe as well as in the United States, sun is everywhere, in fact, they have not been used because of intention of developing oil or going to Alaska to do some terrible things and so forth and so on. Now, I suppose that sooner or later, the United States will also have to accept the necessity of a change towards renewable energies. And in fact, many signs arrive already to that effect. For instance, California, for instance, is, although we have a people, is very different from the point of view. It produces, for instance, one quarter of the energy per person than the rest of the United States. And this is in the right direction. Also, the renewable are very well developed. But what I say is that Europe has the opportunity to take the position of number one in the field. In fact, it is number one in the field of renewable, and can develop a large amount of new technologies, which no doubt will be used by everybody. So we have in Europe a head start for something which, in my view, is inevitable. It says a head start must be preserved, must be continued. In fact, we had decisions. Europe is the only country which takes a decision which is a value of a law, which forces people to do something different. Now, unfortunately, Europe is only 25% of the total energy of the world. And there are two major sources of energy. One is the developing countries, China and so forth, which nowadays are producing a large amount of energy because of their number. And they're growing quite quickly in their per capita utilization of energy. On the other hand, there are the rich countries like United States, Canada, Australia, and so forth and so on. So these people so far are rather reluctant, rather lukewarm on the point of change for two reasons. One is, say, because the developing countries say, well, it's not our job. Industrial civilization was their invention. And the other say, well, the last drop of oil will be ours, if you allow me to say that. And for these reasons, it seems to me that Europe should foster a support on this idea also from the other countries, both the developing countries and the developed countries. And these two things, in my view, are essential, because with only one quarter of the assets in terms of energy, you cannot change the world. If the remaining three quarters will continue to waste energy like crazy.
Thanks there to Italian scientist and Nobel Prize winner Carlo Rubbia. And earlier you heard Mauro Villarini, the engineer in charge of alternative energy projects for Vatican City State. Catholic Association for Communication, or CIGNIS as it's known, has been marking its 80th birthday this year, celebrating a growing presence in all the different forms of media and looking ahead to new challenges on the horizon. This week, its governing body met here in Rome to plan next year's World Congress in Thailand, focused on children's rights and the media. The organisation includes members working in the fields of television and radio, cinema and the newest internet technologies in 140 countries all over the world.
It's very important, your task. You are working in a secular world, dealing in a context that is not easy. It's not easy to remain faithful to what we are and we have to be in the dialogue of today.
At a press conference here at Vatican Radio on Monday, the president of the Vatican's Council for Social Communications, Archbishop Claudio Celi, stressed two of the key challenges facing the organisation in the years ahead.
The first is trying to better understand our modern cultures and how new communication technologies are influencing and forming them. The second challenge is the need to focus more efforts on the formation of Catholic communicators so that they become not only professionals in the use of new technologies, but also well-grounded Christian communicators who understand the culture, context, and trends, and are better able to adapt to the new communications panorama in order to share the good news of Jesus Christ through their testimony and work.
CIGNIS has two broad aims, really. One is to engage with those people who make the media what it is, the producers, the directors, and the shapers of media. And the second broad aim is to support, encourage, facilitate, and develop all those Catholics who work in communication.
Jim McDonnell is Director of Advocacy and former President of CIGNIS Europe. He told me more about the birth of the organisation 80 years ago.
Actually, 1928 was a very good year for Catholics in the media because two organisations were founded in the same year. One was eventually to be called UNDA, which was the Catholic Association for Radio and Television. Of course, when it was founded, it was just radio. Later, it became television. And the other organisation that was founded in 1928 was OSIC, which is the Catholic Association for Cinema and Audiovisuals. And those two organisations merged together in 2001 to become CIGNIS. And now we're celebrating 80 years of activity as Catholic organisations going back to 1928.
Which is interesting to think about because, on the whole, the Church is often accused of having been very slow to have a presence in this world of communications, and yet, right back 80 years ago, they were there in the forefront almost of these new developing technologies.
Yes, I think it's very encouraging. I mean, there are all sorts of interesting things if you look back into the history. First of all, both of those organizations came into being because of lay initiatives, and particularly Catholic women were very active in actually pressing for the setting up of these kinds of organizations. So that's an interesting point. The second thing is that, they embraced the new media of the day with enthusiasm. They realized that radio and then cinema and then television, these were the new media, and they had to learn how to use them and learn how the church could relate to them. Just as today, 80 years on, we have to learn how to deal with the internet and what it means for the future of communication.
If we look back 80 years, though, and think how limited communications were, their aims must have been relatively modest, I imagine, back then.
Actually, in some ways, their aims were very grand. They certainly, in the cinema field, they started off with the intention of producing cinema films. And afterwards, they discovered that this was a little bit more expensive than they thought and rather more complicated. And so they turned much more to critique and review and so on. But I think at the beginning, they felt that the church really should be in there, in the media, at the forefront. And it's like all things, you have to learn as you go along, and you learn what's possible to do. And the other thing is to remember that nobody knew what the potential was of radio or even of cinema, though cinema was more established. And certainly when television came, people were very unsure what this new medium would be like.
You're talking about mothers being particularly involved, of course, concerned presumably about their children and the impact that these new mediums would have on young people.
Yes, there was a lot of that. There was a lot of, what will the media do to our society, to the family and so on. But I think they were also far-seeing enough to see that there's a creative use that could be made of the media, and we're encouraging. There was a lot of encouragement of good Catholic programming and good Catholic films, and then later looking for values in films and looking for values in television and so on.
What would you say perhaps have been the most important developments then over these past 80 years?
Well, I think undoubtedly the huge difference was television. Television had an impact on the world that the pioneers didn't really expect. So coming to terms with television and coming to terms with the television age, in which we're still living in the television age, even though everybody talks about the internet. And so coming to terms with a world in which people were getting their news, their information, their entertainment overwhelmingly from one source, and learning how to live with that. I think there hasn't been anything as big until the internet as television. And then I think the other big change, as I say, is the internet. And the internet is not really a medium like television or radio or cinema, because it's a place where all these media can be integrated. So it's a new environment in which we have to find a way to make our way and to make communications for the church. So I think those are the two really big changes, the shift to television and now the shift to the internet.
It's a difficult question, of course, but how well would you say the church is doing today in trying to have some kind of influence on particularly this new medium of internet, but also still influencing television and television programming?
I think it varies tremendously from country to country, and I think in many ways it's more difficult now, for example, to influence television because you have thousands more channels. It's much more difficult to have an influence as the church could have in the past, when you had a few public channels and a few commercial channels. Now we have hundreds and hundreds of channels. So I think the shift has been in the church circles away from perhaps directly trying to influence the programming to indirectly trying to influence it by helping to educate consumers and parents and children in how to use the media and how to express their views to the media makers. These days, as somebody said, the strongest influence on the media is the off button. And in fact, you've got to help people learn how to use that and how to navigate these new media. Internet creates other challenges because the younger generation are the ones who are at home and happy in the internet. The older generation are perhaps a little more fearful and not so experienced. So who's going to educate who? And in some ways, the younger generation are educating their parents about what the internet is and how it should be developed. I think the church, there are a lot of initiatives, but they're individual initiatives. You have people who are young, there's a young priest who's very active in producing podcasts and blogs and has a large following, Father Roderick in Holland. But there are lots of people like that who are out there putting their videos and their podcasts and so on the web.
And so the aims of Cygnus today is still very much that of trying to influence both the makers of the media and also the consumers of the media. Give us some examples, perhaps, of the ways in which you think this is most successful.
I think, we can say Cygnus has two broad aims, really. One is to engage with those people who make the media what it is, the producers, the directors and the shapers of media. And the second broad aim is to support, encourage, facilitate and develop all those Catholics who work in communication. So if we take the first element, engaging with the media, I think for Cygnus, one of the ways we've had most influence and been able to shape attitudes a bit is through the awards that we give. We are, for example, present at over 30 cinema and TV festivals across the world.
Including the major ones.
Including the major ones like Venice and Cannes and Berlin and Montreal and others too many to mention. What we do there is we present a prize or an award for the film that best encapsulates what we would see as human values or gospel values. And often this is a great encouragement to directors who don't find their work maybe as well appreciated by other people. And so it's an encouragement to them to go on making films that will touch people and will actually bring some quality into the media marketplace. We also do that for television at the Festival of Monte Carlo, which is a big festival, and in Italy at the Pre-Italia. So that, I think, is very important and maybe sometimes underestimated. It also means we get into touch with people who are making films and television, and in conversations and in discussions with them, you often find that a lot of them have very strong values. They're Christians or non-Christians even, and they feel encouraged that the church is willing to say, yes, you're doing a good job, yes, these are the kinds of things that you're involved with, and we want you to continue, we want you to be creative. So I think that's really important. On the other side, in supporting the church, I think in the field of media education, we have initiatives across the world where, to give you one very concrete example, in Fiji, there is a little group called Fiji Media Watch, which comes from the church. And that group monitors what's happening on radio and television and newspapers, actively lobbies the government about regulation, actively raises issues about the media in the press, and has had a tremendous influence on the way in which the media operate in that small country. Now, other countries would love to have such influence, but there you find in many countries from Asia to Africa to Latin America to North America, there are a lot of Catholics working in different ways to educate parents and children in how to use the media and also lobbying governments or regulators to improve, or broadcasters to raise the standards.
And my thanks there to Jim McDonald, Director of Advocacy and former President of the European branch of Cygnus, the World Catholic Association for Communication. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English programme for today. For now, stay tuned to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.